Daniel chapter 9, looking at the 70 weeks of Daniel. In chapter 9, really the setting in the very early part of the chapter, if you kind of recount a little bit of Daniel or know why Daniel is where he's at, it's the 70 years of captivity, and which began at the early part of Daniel's life. He was taken into captivity along with others, and all of that is a result of the nation not honoring the Sabbath year. And so there were 490 years that basically, it's almost like they really never honored the Sabbath year. So every 7 years the land was supposed to be set aside for a year. And so the judgment came that there would be 70 years of captivity. And Daniel comes to recognize that the 70 years were up. And so at the beginning, in the chapter 9, Daniel prays about this. And in partly in response to that prayer, we have this revelation of in verses 24 to 27 about all this, and which brings it in this issue of the 70 weeks of Daniel. And so it begins, it says, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make an atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. So there he mentions the 70 weeks. In verse 25, in the middle of the verse, it talks about there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Which would be 69, and then in the last verse, in verse 27, it talks about 1 week. So we see this division of these weeks. And so when you look through these verses, some of the key phrases, obviously, in verse 24 is the 70 weeks, but also the phrase, your people and your city. Verse 25, it talks about from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. So there's a decree, and when it's issued, that is a starting point. And it says, until the Messiah, the Prince. And then it talks about the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks. In verse 26, it's a reference to the Prince who is to come. And in verse 27, it talks about making a covenant with the many. It will be for 1 week, and then in the middle of that week, and then about the one who makes desolate. So those are, few verses are so packed, it's not like there are unimportant words in it, but nevertheless, those are really key terms. So the 70 weeks, well, weeks could refer to days in the normal sense that we think of weeks. If you said 70 weeks, you would be thinking of 70 Sundays that were coming up, but if that were the case, then the 70 times 7 would be 490 days, less than a year and a half. So all of this would be going to happen very quickly, which is not the case. Weeks could also be thought of as an indefinite term. Some try to say it's indefinite. If so, then that's exactly what it would be, is indefinite. However, it's connected with definite numbers, 7, 62, 1. So to put definite numbers with an indefinite range doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't seem reasonable. Then the thought is that weeks refers to a week of years. So when you're saying a week, you're looking at 7 years. And this starts to make sense when you consider that the judgment, that day, a period of 70 years, was just discussed at the early part of the chapter in verse 2. Daniel refers to the 70 weeks. It says, in the first year of his reign, that is of the king, Daniel observed in the books the number of the years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolation of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So that 70-year captivity had been the focus early on. So when you think about it in this regard, that if you think of Daniel in his present time, and there here's the 70 year of captivity, if you look backwards in time, there had been 77s, that 490 years of violation of the sabbatical year, which why they were in captivity. So the 77s is why they were in captivity. And so it makes sense, therefore, to say the 70 weeks is following this idea of years. So 70 times 7 in terms of years, or 490 years looking in the future. So the 70 weeks, understand the weeks as a week of 7 years, a week of years. And go there. Also, he talks about your people, your city. So the 70 weeks has a primary concern about Daniel's people and Daniel's city. Well, Daniel's people then would be Jewish. In Daniel's city, it would seem to be Jerusalem. Even though Daniel left Israel when he was, 16 years old, and he's, been gone many years, but his home would have been Israel. The home capital would have been Jerusalem. So that seems to be the focus of the cherished homeland. Then there are six objectives given in this verse, verse 24. Six of it. To finish the transgression. This would refer to the bringing to an end or completion Israel's apostasy. It's for apostasy, the sense of wandering away from the Lord, that had brought the 70 years of judgment, which Daniel has been praying about. And so it's looking at there will be a completion, a bringing to an end of these kind of transgressions. It says to make an end of sin. This apparently looks at an idea of sealing up sin, not so much in the sense that there would come a point when there is no sin, and that's what it's looking at, which that will happen, but that's not what probably this is looking at, but much more in the sense of that all this is brought together in a sense of judgment and with the provisions of forgiveness, and in that sense, sin comes to an end. And it says to make an atonement for iniquity. And this surely points to the picture of Christ's work on the cross, that he makes atonement. So those first three all are negative in a sense, and all would deal with sin and probably become more specific, where with the third one, is very specific that there will be atonement made for iniquity or for sin. And then fourth, to bring an everlasting righteousness. And so the cross work of Christ laid the foundation, but it will be in his second coming that this will be applied to the earth, that there will be this establishment of a righteousness. Then fifth, it says to seal up vision and prophecy. So the revelation by vision and prophecy will be brought to an end. There would be not a need for revelation once Christ is returned in the second coming. And then sixth, to anoint the most holy place. Possibly refers to the Holy of Holies in the New Jerusalem, or to the Holy of Holies in the Millennial Temple. However, both of these are after the 70 weeks, because that would be putting you into a millennium or later. Walbert, who was the late John Walbert, who was the president of Dallas Seminary, writes, on the other hand, the six items are not in chronological order and would not violate the text seriously to have this prophecy fulfilled at any time in relationship to the consummation, to the Christ coming. I was rereading that, and it struck me it would have been fun to have class with. I wouldn't have been that brave or that smart when I was a student. Not that I'm smarter now or braver, but did pick up on the idea of, he said, it will not violate the text seriously, as though to violate the text not seriously is okay. I just thought it was interesting wording. I surprised an editor, somebody didn't redo that sentence, but it appears that this would be following perhaps after the 70 weeks, but it's looking at still the purposes of this, and that's what it brings about. So Christ's coming, that event may not happen within that period, but it is his coming that sets that into stage to happen. Then in verse 25, it gets into some interesting things that get a little more technical in trying to you know, to pinpoint them down, but it says 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city. That's where we're in 24. And then 25 says, so you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. So the 70 weeks has a starting point, and that starting point is defined as there will be a decree. And the decree will have to do with the restoration of Jerusalem. And this restoration will even take place in the time of distress. So what decree? Well, there are four different decrees that are associated with construction projects in Jerusalem. First you look at a time period. Daniel is writing in the first year of the king Darius, Daniel 9:1. But then you have the decree of Cyrus, which is spoken of in Ezra chapter 1, also in 2 Chronicles. And that is that decree where there were people were able to leave captivity and return to Jerusalem and to start to rebuild the temple. And so that would be about 539 B.C. Then there was the decree of Darius, which occurred a little bit later, as recorded in Ezra 5, chapter 5. And that would be a, completion work on the temple in about 519. And then there was the decree of Artaxerxes to Ezra. And that was in 557. But then 13 years later is probably the decree that's been talked about, and that's the decree of Artaxerxes to Nehemiah, which was in 444 B.C. And it was the other decrees were more specific for the temple. But if you recall, in Nehemiah's concern, even while there are issues about the temple, it was that the wall is down. The city is not protected. And the decree was to allow Nehemiah to get resources from the king and king's forest and so forth, and to go rebuild the wall. So there was a protection, a rebuilding of Jerusalem. So that appears to be the one that fits this context best. And through some datings that are outside of my expertise for sure, but depending on other people, that this time is probably would be like 444 B.C. in Nisan, which would be, would fit into our calendar month of March and April. And then he talks about 69 weeks, which would be the 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The division of the 69 weeks into 7 and 62 appears to be stylistic. There have been attempts to say, well, the 7 weeks are for this and the 62 are this, but they appear to fit other patterns to just being a stylistic way of dividing them, and that they're cumulative or continuous, that it's not some break in time. And so I think it's better just seeing them as 69 weeks. And so if you look on the other sheet of paper that you had. Yes, go ahead.
Well,
oh, really?
That's what it says.
I don't think so.
And they're indicating that this event in Nehemiah is 446.
Well, there some of those datings, a lot of times, in some of the elders like Walvoord will say 445. but I'll check on the Nisan, but I don't think that's right. But
Well, they have shorter months than we do, so they rotate. Nisan is going to be a different time of year.
No, but they have a 13th month they put in every so many years.
Do they?
Well, yeah. I mean, you get into all the because I don't know if I have any notes here.
This one doesn't have a calendar in it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where, you know, if that was a mistake in there or if they're referring to something else, but.
Well, I've got.
You know, I mean.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. I know Ryrie, I don't know if it's in. I know his newer study Bible hit. And, because Nisan is, you know, goes back to the first of the month, or first of the year in that new calendar was started with Passover, where God tells them on the first month. And so everything rotates around that. So that's where that comes from. Now you can get into issues of, still, when you're going to date some of these things, and that's, you know, all this dating, you know, is where you get in just the you know, gets you way, you know, I mean, into some really phenomenal stuff.
Civil calendar and a religious calendar, and like the month names were the same, but they were different seasons or something.
Well, on this little handout, and this is from Harold Honer. And his book is the chronological aspects of Christ, and so much of, you know, much of what I would, some of the other stuff was taken from this. But, you know, what were his position, and I just gave you the chart that summarizes it, if you want to get into his justification for some of these starting points on here, you'd have to read his book. But you come back to you know, obviously there's a dating with Daniel's time and Nehemiah, where you come down to come to some very specific ways of dating when this Artaxerxes' 20th year was. And so you get into those kind of datings as a starting point, which he fixes as Nisan 1 of Artaxerxes' 20th year, or which fits our calendar of March the 5th, 444 B.C. And then through some other dating kind of things, which aren't on this page, he gives the triumphal entry of Christ, that is, you know, Palm Sunday, as March 30th in A.D. 33. And when you work with these, you know, I mean, he didn't pick these dates out and come up with the other, but when you come up with those two dates and you look at it and you look in between, then he comes up with his analogies or his calculations, which have to do with the 70 weeks being off the Hebrew idea of a calendar of 360 days, and then you have to adjust that to our calendar, which is 365, but not precisely 365 because we have leap year. And so you get into those calculations. You also get into the whole thing of the change from AD to BC, which is a year difference in there. And anyway, you go through all these kinds of things, and you end up with that there are 69 weeks of 360 days, 360-day years in this time period between March the 5th in 444 BC and March the 30th in AD 33. And so with that, you know, with those kind of calculations and idea, which his is, you know, has done a lot to get it down to an exact time, where some others, for other reasons, depending on how those calculations were done, you'll see those time periods of in Nehemiah is 45 or something along those lines. But nevertheless, you're in this time period of saying from when Artaxerxes told Nehemiah that he could go to the time when Christ entered fits the 69 weeks. And it's his triumphal entry as opposed to his crucifixion, because it's not, the reference isn't to the crucifixion. If you notice, his reference is to in 25, until Messiah the Prince. It's looking at a triumphal entry, not looking at you know, the crucifixion. But yet the crucifixion happened shortly after. And even the wording that it says, then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off. And so that reference in 26 to the crucifixion is after the 62 weeks, which occurred, you know, a week later, or less than a week, actually, for the crucifixion. So the 69 weeks, looking at 69 consecutive seven-year periods, which lead up to Palm Sunday, and then verse 26 moves in subsequent to that. After that, the Messiah will be cut off, which looks at the crucifixion. And then it says a reference to a prince who is to come. It says, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come. So the prince who is to come is a reference to the Antichrist. And the people of the prince who are to come, that would be the Romans. Yet that it's in the sense of this immediately is looking in verse 26 at the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. But it's not the prince that destroyed it, it's the people of the prince who is yet to come that destroyed Jerusalem. So it's looking at the Romans who destroyed Jerusalem in 70 AD, but it's in that sense of the prince who is to come will come in the form of that aspect of like a Roman, you know, of the people of Rome and yet to come. So it's our first reference in this section to the Antichrist, but it's not the Antichrist who destroys the city here. It's the people of him. And so the thought is in verse 26, we're looking at after Christ is crucified, Jerusalem will be destroyed, and which is what happened some 40 years after Christ was crucified. Jerusalem was destroyed. And then in verse 27, it picks back up with this reference, and he. So the question is, who are we talking about? He. Is that the most immediate antecedent is the prince who is to come, which would be the Antichrist. If you try to make this say it's a reference to the Messiah, it doesn't work well. It works best if it's looking at this prince who is to come, the Antichrist. So the prince who is to come, that is the Antichrist, will do something. He will make a firm covenant. But notice who he makes the covenant with. The covenant is made with the many. And so you're back to this, well, now who's the many? Because that's not a reference we have to. We don't have any antecedent to the many. But the context of the people have been back in verse 24, your people. And so this would be to the Jews, that the Antichrist will make a covenant with the Jewish people. And at this point, the Jewish people that would be in view of this are not believing Jews, but unbelieving Jews. And that he will make a covenant with them. This covenant, in the middle of that week, so in the middle of that seven-year period, which then starts to, you can see where we get the idea of a seven-year tribulation, is because of the 70th week of Daniel that's still there. In the middle of that, which we'll see several references in Revelation to this middle, whether you divide it in 3.5 years or divide it by 42 months, with both of those references are there. In the middle of that time, he breaks this covenant. So there's a covenant that's referred a little more elsewhere in the sense of that there's a covenant that, you know, would be a covenant of peace. There obviously is something advantageous, I mean, for people to enter into a covenant, that there's some treaty, some covenant that can be signed that people can go into that brings about some sense of neutrality, some sense of peace, some sense of that's advantageous to people. And it seems to have some very definite advantages to Israel, because you notice that it's in the middle of it that he puts a stop to their sacrifice and offering. So there's some freedoms that are there for Israel that all of a sudden in the middle come to a halt. And it says in he will make desolation. Well, in Matthew chapter 24, verses 15 to 16, Jesus makes reference to this. He talks about what Daniel referred to as the desolation of abomination of desolation. So the Antichrist does some things at this point that are that defile the temple. And so instead of the processes that they've had in place, the sacrifices and so forth, that at this point now, that has been set aside, and he now comes into a position of being, putting himself in the position of being worshipped. And so he breaks that temple and stops the temple sacrifices. You can look in Matthew 24 and see Jesus' reference to the same account, which will be one of the things we'll need to look at shortly, is all of Matthew 24, as it deals with the same issues, this whole period of time. But in 24:15, it says, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains." So Jesus makes reference to the same time period during this. So Daniel 24-27 talks about 70 weeks. The 70 weeks, even though in Scripture they're broken down into 7, 62, and 1, there's nothing contextually to make a division between the 7 and the 62. It seems to be stylistic, so it's 60, 69. But there is by its wording, an allowance for a gap, because it says after the 69th week. So there's nothing that firmly tells you there has to be a gap, but the wording suggests a gap by saying that after the 69 weeks this will happen, and then it talks about an additional week, which that fits with other things in Scripture. There's nothing that fits if you go the 69 weeks and calculate those days to the triumphal entry of Christ, and then you put another 7 years, there's nothing that fits chronologically. The destruction of Israel doesn't even occur in that time period. So you have the 69 weeks that have a very literal 7-year aspect to each week, so a literal 70 sevens or 69 sevens. And so then when you come to that 70th week, if it would follow the same pattern, which there would be no reason not to think it's going to follow the same pattern, then it would be that 1 week of 7 years, which fits some of the references in Revelation of 3.5 years being the midpoint, or 42 months. Also, as we've looked at some of the views of eschatology, you can see that when you start with the New Testament and you say that if we interpret Revelation literally, if we take it in a normative, straightforward sense, that we have to see that Christ is going to return and establish his kingdom. So from the New Testament, if you understand it normatively, you will be premillennial. And that's where the historic premillennialists are, the non-dispensationalist premillennialists are. They just want to start and stay with the New Testament. And therefore, they have a quasi-position for Israel, that there seems to be some special place for Israel during the tribulation, but kind of disappearing after that, and there's no special place for Israel during the church age. But if you start with the Old Testament, not necessarily trying to put the Old Testament in competition with the New Testament, but just following that progression, that this 70th week has specifically to do with Israel. It's all about Israel. This decree is about your people and your city. And thus brings in the whole concept into dispensationalism of why it would be reasonable, why it would seem logically necessary that the church exit the scene prior to the tribulation. And that because the tribulational period is a judgment period about Israel. All the focus is on Israel. So when you look at the timing of the rapture, it has little to do with someone's studying passages per se and coming to a reasonable conclusion. I think I mentioned one of the last times that you know, I have a couple of books that are written by theologies that are written by historic premillennialists. And in their presentation, they present all the possible views of rapture. So they, you know, pick the pre and the mid and the post. And then they say, well, let's consider it and analyze it. And they conclude that it's post-trib rapture is right. In my opinion, the faulty logic in their presentation is that their philosophical basis prior to that already determined what they were going to conclude. It had nothing to do with any of that. They, by necessity, have to conclude post-millennialism because they've already excluded all these prophetic passages. Where for the dispensationalist, it's the opposite. If you say all of these prophecies of the Old Testament have a place, then logical necessity says that the rapture occurs before the tribulation, because the tribulation is about Israel. And the only way around that is some mid-trib position that starts focusing on words like wrath and things like that, that basically is the same logic, but it's just putting the focus somewhere else. So the 70 weeks of Daniel, the 69 weeks take us from a decree that was future for Daniel, that from our vantage point was Nehemiah, and there was a literalness of 69 sevens of years from that decree to Nehemiah to when Christ entered on Palm Sunday. A few days later, the crucifixion takes place, which says here, after the 69 weeks, he will be cut off. And then we have a gap, and we're in the middle of that gap period now. At one point in the future, that 70th week will begin, and in the early part of that, there will be a covenant that prince who is yet to come, the Antichrist, will make with the Jewish people. And in the middle of that 7 years, he will break that covenant. And as you study Revelation, you see that the second half of Revelation, the second half of the tribulation, is much more intense than the first half, and that would be the reason we're seeing all of these changes taking place. So the 70th week of Daniel is equivalent to what we often refer to as the Great Tribulation. And that's one of the starting places of it is this passage on the 70th week of Daniel. The dating becomes technical. And if you want to be exact like Honer is, to pin it down to exact days. But he has a published work and you can read it and go through his various arguments if you're interested in that. But if you just take it in a general sense without trying to pinpoint it down to exact days, and you just take those starting points of that year of 444 or 445 and this time of death of Christ, that it's in that, you know, amazingly close period right there without even trying to point it down to exact day-to-day, you know, moment-to-moment like Honer has done. What do you have, questions or thoughts or insights? Or
I read my notes wrong, so Nisan, it does say spring.
Oh, okay.
That answers some of those questions. Helps if you're reading the right footnote. But I guess...
We're just all taking somebody else's word for it anyway.
But I guess what you were saying about the covenant with Israel is where the... I think we often think that the collapse, the rapture, and the beginning of the tribulation is kind of the same thing, where this would indicate that it's the covenant.
As far as that beginning point?
Yeah.
Now that's an interesting one. If, you know, is there some lapse of time? And, you know, you get into some of those things that are pretty silent, but...
It's probably not simultaneous, since the, you know, rapture happens in the same day.
Yeah, and it... Yeah, it could be, and you can see how it could happen very quickly by, to me, I guess there have been some things that have happened that they show you that things can change quickly that people think will never change. And during Reagan's administration, the Berlin Wall came down just like that. I mean, it was incredible how fast when it was going to start, that it was down. And the same thing with Russia. Russia, the Soviet Union, I guess Russia's still there technically, I guess, you know, you say the Soviet Union. Soviet Union collapsed overnight. As far as, now I'm sure, you know, if you're studying economics and politics and all that, you can show, as with anything else, the you know, how things were weakening and when it really all that. But as far as the world is concerned, as far as observing it, I mean, they're there one day and they're basically not there the next day. Now, for me, that's interesting in terms of when I first became a Christian, you know, in the mid-70s, there was so much interest in prophecy and all this stuff was lining up with how the Soviet Union was this power from the north, and it's just, everything lines up for it. It's exactly it. You know, it's so obvious that, you know, the rapture is going to occur any day because of that fact. Well, now 30 years later, we're going, okay, that wasn't it. Not only because we're still here, but because they're not. But what I find so interesting with those two world events that occurred in our recent history is that it shows you how quickly things could change. That our perspective is that, you know, all these things need to be lining up for this to happen. Well, yeah, in one sense, they do need to be lining up for that to happen. But actually all that needs to be there is some undercurrent foundation lining up. And all those other things can just happen very quickly sometimes. So when you come to that sense of, which is really hard to imagine, the rapture occurs and the number of people that are just instantly gone, what does the world make of that? How does the world deal with that? What kind of anxiety does that create? What kind of relief does that create? What, you know, I mean, how does one package that?
There's going to be a huge economic impact.
Yeah. And so how quickly would that happen? So would that happen the next day? Does it happen at the same time? Does it happen? Is there some sense of a gap? I don't know, but I can see that it wouldn't necessarily have to be any length of time because when somebody comes on the scene providing something and it's so different that you know, it can happen. But yes, but you're right. We speak of, from our vantage point of saying, basically the rapture is the beginning of the tribulation, which is not, even the terminology doesn't say that. It's the rapture occurs prior to the tribulation. But we almost speak of it as kind of the bell rings, which brings an end to this class period, which is also the beginning of the next class period. And that's not necessarily what Scripture is saying there. Any other questions or thoughts or... I don't think any of it's based on Daniel. Now, I imagine somebody is. You know, you got people do everything. I really don't know, to be real precisely, on the... you know, to my knowledge, the only thing I'm not, you know, aware of that gets fairly precise, you know, is out of date now, but was Hal Lindsey's. That was basing it upon the idea of generation, where Jesus says, you know, this generation will not part to see that. And so, and then he tied that into the restoration of, political restoration of Israel in our time period. And so if you start with Israel in, what was it, 47? Is that the right year, Rob?
Yeah.
So if you start with 47, and then you had this idea that it was 30 years, and so in 77. And then there was the thought, you know, in 77, yeah, you got to do something. And so then it became, well, really, generations 40 years, is my understanding.
I remember there was a booklet, 88 Reasons.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. You see, I've never read any of those. I only know with Lindsey. And then, and my understanding was, he switched after that to say 47 really wasn't. It was 69. 69 is when they really became established. So that's the starting point. I don't know if he's left all of that now or if he's still, because I don't ever read any of that or deal with it, so I don't know. Now, those other ones, like the 88 reasons for what was 88 and 88 or something, and then the next year he wrote 89 for 89, whatever. You know, are those, do they have any real reasons, or is it just to make money? I don't know. I'm not sure what those, if there was, I mean, there's something they're dating it on, but I don't know what it's being based on, if it's vague stuff or whether it's a, you know, kind of weird calculations where you start saying this is that and that's this and a lot of that stuff. Now, Lindsay's was a little more textually driven. I mean, I think it was wrong interpretation. Yeah. You know, in the terms of, I mean, he wasn't, you know, coming up with numbers that are symbols of this or that and, you know, kind of. But I think he, you know, was off. I know in class one day, Dr. Pentecost, somebody asked Dr. Pentecost, where'd Lindsay get this? You know, because Lindsay was a graduate of Dallas Seminary. And Pentecost said, well, he didn't have my class. So it was kind of interesting. But I don't know where. I've never read any of those other books. And I know some of the other stuff you hear of is based upon some weird, you know, kind of these weird calculations that you get into all these symbols. And but it's been going on for a long time. I remember my dad talking about it, that, you know, people would leave their homes and go up on a mountaintop to live or something. And I think some of those maybe not so tied to any specific things, but maybe you're talking about world events and time of year. You know, the turn of a century, you know, those kinds of things, that, where people can come up with some milestone and say it has to be that. There's an interesting one that has postulated that off the idea that a day of the Lord is a thousand years, and that the 7 days of creation will follow the age of the earth, and that... And so basically with this millennium, that would be this, so that with that, we you know, we should have had the return of Christ. And so those are interesting because, you know, when you're trying to date from the beginning of history to now, even 70, you know, how many, being off a few years wouldn't be surprising. But, you know, those kinds of things just don't, they generate a lot of interest before the fact, and there's not much you can say when it comes and goes, is other than, well, I guess that wasn't it. You know, I hadn't thought about it, but I guess, you know, trying to sell on eBay 88 reasons that the world's going to end in 1988, you know, I don't know if there's a big market for that 10 years later. Any other comments or questions? What are there in prayer requests?